From the Land Grant University in Urbana, Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 22nd day of April 2014. It's Earth Day. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson. He's at L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. And Don Day will help us take a look at the weather forecast for the growing regions of the nation and whether farmers will be able to continue planting corn or not across much of the Midwest over the next week or so. We'll hear from Susan Littlefield at KZEN in Columbus, Nebraska, about some work that's being done on how to save lives inside of grain bins that are on farms across the nation. And Dave Dickey, our Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media, will be here with a look at the day's agricultural news on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from the University of Illinois.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and drydown data, is at AgriGold.com.
Let's check now the numbers as they finished up in Chicago for this Tuesday afternoon. May wheat in the soft red at $6.73 a gain today, up 4¾ cents. July at $6.79½, up 4 as well. Hard red July finished at $7.46¾. That was up 5 cents for the day. May corn futures at $4.96¼, 7¾ cents higher. July at $5.02, up 8¼. In September, corn at $4.99, up 7½ cents. December at $4.95¾, 5¾ cents higher. In the March of next year, $5.03½, up 5½ cents. May of next year at $5.09¾, up 5¼. May beans at $14.79¾, a loss today, down 19 cents. July at $14.70¾, 16½ lower. And August, $13.97¼, down 11¾. November beans at $12.15½, 8¼ lower. January futures at $12.21, down 7½ cents. Bean meal at $4.79.80 in the lead option, down 5.90. Bean oil at $42.74, 26 cents lower. Live cattle futures in the April at $143.70, up 25 cents. June up 42½ at $134.97½. May feeders did not trade. August contract at $182.27½, up 37½ cents. And lean hogs at $121.25 per 100 pounds, up 22½ cents at the CME Group in Chicago. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It comes to you from Illinois Public Media. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures trading the nearby at $102.13 a barrel. That's down $2.24. The RBOB price for gasoline or wholesale at $3.09, just about 0.3 cents higher. And ethanol futures at $2.24.07, up 0.3 cents. The spread between the two, or the difference at 84¾ cents wide, is 2¼ cents narrower than it was yesterday. Natural gas at $4.73.09, up 4¾ cents, and diesel fuel for the day at $3.03, 0.8 cents lower. Gold futures at $1,280.70, settled down $7.40, and the U.S. dollar trading 79.91 on the 10-minute delay is down 0.048 for the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service for the Urbana-Champaign area on this Tuesday afternoon. Sunny skies, a high of 62, although that doesn't look quite right. Temperature outside, actually 63. Feels warmer than that. North-northwest winds at 17 miles an hour, gusting all the way to 26 for the afternoon. And then this evening, mostly clear and a low of 35 degrees on a north-northwest wind at 6 to 13 miles an hour. Mostly sunny tomorrow and a high of 62. A northeast wind at 5 to 8. Wednesday night, mostly cloudy and a low of 45 degrees. East, southeast winds by then at 10 miles an hour. Thursday, some showers, a few thunderstorms. That'll be likely mainly after 1 in the afternoon. Central time, mostly cloudy and a high of 69 degrees. It'll be breezy Thursday with a southeast wind at 15 to 22, gusting all the way to 29. A chance of rainfall in the area set at 60% for Thursday, and it drops to 50% for Thursday night with a low of 48 degrees. And Friday, sunny skies and 72. It will be breezy Friday evening, partly cloudy and 46. And Saturday, mostly sunny and 62. More on the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Medium. It is the 22nd day of April, a Tuesday afternoon. On the phone line with us is Wayne Nelson at L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Wayne.
Well, good afternoon, Todd.
Well, a couple of things that we probably ought to take up, and this is something that we knew was coming but has been finalized. The CME Group has changed the trading limits, or when they will be updated. They'll be updated on a regular basis from now on until they decide something different on May the 1st. And November the 1st, won't they?
That's right. We got the new limits out there, pulled corn and wheat in a little bit. But they extended the beans, I think, up to a dollar now on a daily trading basis limit. So that's just a little bit scary in our world.
Yeah, so soybeans go from 70 cents today, and then on May 1st, there'll be a dollar trading limit per bushel. And that'll stay put until we get to November the 1st, when they will do another adjustment based on whatever the trading level of soybeans might be at that point. Corn in the same boat, meaning it will change on that day. But we go from a 40-cent trading limit to a 35-cent, and that starts for the trading day May 1st. And that actually begins April the 30th. That's when the session starts in the evening. And soft red winter wheat is now 45 cents on May the 1st. Down from the 60-cent trading range. So that's one of the things that's happening. In Chicago, futures are moving lower at this point, down 19 cents in the bean pit as they finished up for the day. What was the adjustment all about?
Well, a couple things there, Todd. I think number one, we saw unwinding of long beans, short corn, long beans, short wheat spreads. As we went on today, the Chinese announced they're going to start selling 3 million metric tons reserve beans on their weekly auctions, and then instead of starting in June like they generally do, they're going to start May 6th. You know, there's rumors, I'm not sure if it's confirmed or not, of Argentine meal being sold into the U.S. for June and July, and Brazilian beans trying to work up the Mississippi and into the lakes. A lot of talk about these problems with the Chinese letters of credit for the beans down Brazil and Argentina. Some boats sailing without them open. Some of them saying they don't open them. We don't have the money to take them. And that, of course, that way, too. Also a rumor, this is strictly a rumor, that there was some export firm agents detained in China for questioning due to this questionable financing that they were able to receive on these beans. So that's another thing, too. So along with that, the beans went down, the corn went up on the spread unwinding. Yes. And, of course, the forecast says maybe some more planting delays, and, of course, only the 6% planting progress in the corn helped the corn stay positive. And then looking at some colder, wetter weather for next week in the forecast sort of says maybe a few planting delays with that slower planting progress.
Yeah, so it should be an interesting week to watch the marketplace. We did have, as you mentioned, corn futures were higher, so were the wheat futures. Was that just a carryover from the corn? Because they have been looking at not the best of conditions in the United States for soft red winter and hard red winter wheat.
Yeah, I mean, basically along the way, we're hearing a lot of wheat that's getting tore up. Well, the insurance company's going out and adjusting it 5 and 10 bushel the acre. And we know in northern Illinois, you know, personally, I can tell you there's been 600 or 700 acres tore up from that when it was assessed. And, of course, you know, we did see a little better rain for some of the wheat out west, but some of the areas that could really use some is getting shortchanged out there, too. So, you know, got a little bit of strength on the weather there, but the world supply of wheat is still a thing. But it's just like the beans. The U.S. could have a shortage of wheat because of the amount of winter kill.
How much movement have you had in your area of planters? Not of just tillage, but of planters at this point.
Well, right here in Montgomery County, it's moving along pretty slow as far as the planting of corn. Over in Fountain County, we know quite a few guys run over there, and a few hundred acres. A lot of farmers are going to say they'll have 250, 300 acres done by tonight that way. If we go down south of here, down towards Greencastle, and there we know that the planters are running pretty good, and we know that the planters run down around Clay City and Terre Haute and down southern Indiana, too. But right here in the local area, not hardly any planting done before Easter, and most of them looking at this colder weather coming up for next week and being a little cautious.
Hey, you usually keep a pretty good eye on the local ethanol plants. How are they doing today?
They're processing away here. We're still fortunate enough we can get stuff moved out here, and they are beginning to take corn a little more. They were had bought an awful lot of corn there in that last little run-up, and I think that they'll be happy with that because they can keep processing as if farmers do go to the field for a week. But ethanol plants are running right along right now.
Do you give farmers a general set of advice as to what they ought to be thinking about when they're in their field in terms of marketing? Because oftentimes they simply forget about it. They're really busy and they're putting grain in the ground, oil seeds or corn, one of the two.
You know, we used to really feel that way, but now with a lot of auto steer and everything like that, sometimes we get more calls when they're in the tractor than we do when they're out there actually doing some other things. So, but I think, you know, we're going to want to be watching to see how this Chinese sales of the beans go. You know, did we maybe put in a short-term top on these beans today with the way we acted? It's going to see how they follow through tomorrow.
No, you think that's possible? With short-term tops there?
I don't know about a top, but I do think that, you know, it's going to, we're going to need to see when this spread unwinding quits.
How about livestock?
The livestock, you know, short numbers, it's going to stay strong. We're going to keep this livestock. The meat demand is just good, and we're not going to fall out of bed on these things. Don't know that we're going to be shooting for new highs, but we're going to stay high in the livestock.
PED will remain an underpin for the
hog market?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you know, as we've looked at a lot of this stuff, a lot of empty hog houses out there for some of these big producers, that they'd generally be full, and because of what the PED, we're going to see down here last part of July, August, that time frame where I think that the slaughter number is going to be way down.
And then, of course, cattle on feed reports due out Friday afternoon.
Yeah, and, you know, we're feeding these cattle to heavier weights, but I don't think the numbers are going to match up to what we'd like to have.
All right, anything else before I let you go?
That's about it, Todd.
Hey, thanks so much.
Thanks, Todd.
Wayne Nelson is with L&M Commodities. He's in New Market, Indiana, and joins us here on the closing market report for this Tuesday afternoon.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, offering financial products and services specifically for the agriculture industry, including farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, and point-of-sale financing, as well as farm cash management solutions.
And don't forget to visit our website. The address there is willag.org. That's willag.org. There you'll find all of our agricultural programming from the opening market report to the closing market report and everything in between at willag.org. You can access it 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, on demand, anytime you want. And if you're using AutoSteer, you might be able to find an opportunity just to check it out and see how that works at willag.org. It does shrink down, so you can use it on your smartphones. It looks good on your iPad, Androids. It doesn't matter what you're using. That's at willag.org.
Support for WILL Agriculture comes from Murray Wise Associates, LLC, providing nationwide land auctions, farmland sales and management, and financial advice for agribusiness. Information on upcoming land auctions and offerings can be found at murraywiseassociates.com.
Your Director of Agricultural Programming, Dave Dickey, will be here in a moment. He'll take us through the agricultural news for this Tuesday afternoon.
In agricultural news, Japanese and U.S. negotiators are struggling to reach a preliminary agreement on a free trade pact ahead of President Barack Obama's visit to Tokyo this week. Japan's economy minister says that the two sides remain at a considerable distance over trade in farm products and vehicles a day before President Barack Obama arrives. A Japan-U.S. agreement is seen as crucial for progress on a wider deal for the 12 nations involved in the Trans-Pacific Partnership. The major sticking points between Japan and the U.S. have to do with removing tariffs on agricultural products such as rice, beef, dairy products, and sugar that Japan has long protected from foreign competition. Automobiles are another hurdle. A new study published in the journal Nature Climate Change contends that using residue from corn crops to produce cellulosic ethanol could release more greenhouse gases than gasoline. The study concludes that carbon dioxide emissions increase and soil organic carbon decreases when large volumes of corn stover are converted to ethanol. But the study also suggests some of the carbon problems could be reduced by better conservation practices on farms that sell corn stover for cellulosic conversion. Three major ethanol facilities are expected to come online this year that will rely heavily on corn stover as a feedstock. As farmers use information technology to grow more with less money, many are being asked to share their data. That was a subject earlier this month at a meeting between the American Farm Bureau Federation and six large companies. But the Federation says farmers are worried about security, privacy, and other problems that could crop up. Michelle O'Neill reports.
Mary Kay Thatcher, Senior Director of Congressional Relations for the Federation, says Midwestern corn and soybean farmers have been using GPS and weather information to maximize yield for years. Now the question is whether to share the data with agronomists to analyze and help improve efficiency even more.
You don't want to have to go in and read a data privacy policy from John Deere because that's the kind of equipment you have, and a different one from Monsanto because that's the kind of seed that you put in, and a different one from Precision Planting because that's the technology that you use. We'd like to see if we couldn't get some of these definitions and terms standardized.
Farmers want to know how their data would be used and who'd have access to it. Thatcher says the vast majority of the 60 companies that offer ag tech services say they'll make the information anonymous, but not GPS coordinates. That could give data miners a way to identify farmers and their locations. I'm Michelle O'Neill.
And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. You can always find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. By the way, that will shrink down and fit on your smartphone. Just go to willag.org, and you can listen to our programming anytime you'd like right there on your smartphone. If you don't like that version of it, try this one. It's http://, and don't bother to put a www in front of this. m.willag.org. That stands for mobile. m.willag.org. Two different websites, but the same really great content that comes to you from WILL and Illinois Public Media on agriculture. Now up next, you know, in a split second, a good day of farming can go really bad when you find yourself sinking into grain and becoming trapped. Fire departments across the nation are training with grain bin rescue tubes that, according to instructor Dale Eckdell of Outstate Data, have saved lives.
The equipment we have was developed by firemen for firemen, and it was developed so that they could adapt to the different kinds of scenarios that could happen on a family farm or a commercial facility. Because of that, we want to make sure that every fireman knows how to use it and can adapt it to them situations. It's kind of like you'd give a fireman a fire extinguisher and not tell him how to use it.
Keeping in mind that not every grain bin is built the same.
It's a 10-panel system, and the reason we decided to go with a 10-panel system is, one, each panel themselves would be smaller. Some of the older bins that you'll find on family farms only have like a 20-inch opening. And because of that small diameter opening, you're going to have something that will fit through there so the rescue can continue. So at 18 inches, this panel will fit through. And it's made out of aluminum, so it's light and very easy to use.
Eckdell holds training for firefighters and EMTs across the nation, and he always stresses,
be safe as a firefighter. Don't get yourself in danger yourself. Go in that bin with a plan. Practice, and practice.
He always stresses that farmers need to always tell someone where they are. So if something does go wrong in the bin, the rescue time can be shortened, and hopefully a life can be saved. Our thanks go to Susan Littlefield of KZEN in Columbus, Nebraska for that report and all of the audio that came along with it. The grain tubes, by the way, if you want to see them in action, are on our website at willag.org. A couple of months ago, I was in Bloomington, Illinois at the Illinois Corn Growers Association, actually at the ASMARC building, which is a training facility right next to ICGA, where the Grain and Feed Association of the state held a training session for the use of these grain tubes by elevator operators and managers and their employees. You can see how one works right there on our website at willag.org.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Leonard Seed Service, an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgrow seed products to farmers in East Central Illinois. Leonard Seed Service provides customer services and agronomic information to help customers maximize profits. Leonard Seed Service, 217-497-2270.
Yesterday afternoon, the United States Department of Agriculture released the weekly crop progress report. It shows as of the 20th day of April, that would have been Sunday, 6% of the corn crop around the nation had been sown. That compares to 14% on the rolling five-year average, although last year at this time, just 4% of the crop had been put in the ground. And a week ago, that number was 3%, so we've doubled the amount of corn that was put in the ground 1 week ago. Up to 6% around the nation in Illinois, 22% of the crop is normally the average, just 5% of the ground. Indiana, 14% of the corn crop usually planted by this date, only 1%, and Iowa at 11% planted normally on the rolling five-year average, just 2%. We'll hear more from Iowa in just a moment. Minnesota hasn't started planting. Normally they're 9% of the way along. And Nebraska, the number three corn-producing state in the nation, is said to be 4% sown in corn. They're as close as anybody. Normally they're about 6% of the way along in their corn planting on the 20th day of April. Taking a quick look at what's been happening with the winter wheat at this time, across the selected 18 states, 9% of the crop is said to be headed. That's normally 17% at this time of year. The condition of the wheat crop is 32% in very poor to poor condition, 34% fair, 30% good, and 4% excellent. Now here's the statistician from Iowa with an update from that region.
This is Katie Andel, agricultural statistician for the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service, Iowa Field Office, with the weekly crops and weather report for the week ending April 20, 2014. Iowa farmers were able to apply fertilizers and herbicides during the 3.2 days that were suitable for field work. Statewide, 51% of the oats were planted, 17 percentage points behind the normal pace. 7% of the oats acreage planted has emerged. A few farmers reported planting corn. Temperature extremes ranged from a low of 12 degrees at Sheldon and Sibley Tuesday morning to a high of 82 degrees at Little Sioux Saturday afternoon. Temperatures for the week averaged 6.2 degrees below normal. Rain for the week varied from 0.07 inches at Rock Rapids to 4.87 inches at Pella. Average precipitation for the week was 1.52 inches, almost double the normal amount. This was the wettest week since late June 2013. Topsoil and subsoil moisture levels improved slightly to 72 and 45% adequate to surplus, respectively. Iowa's pasture conditions were rated 18% good to excellent. Livestock conditions are good, but most cattle have yet to be moved onto pastures. This is Katie Andel reporting from the USDA NAS Iowa Field Office.
Our thanks, of course, go to USDA NAS for their weekly crop progress reports. Those are released at 3 p.m. Central Time each and every Monday afternoon. We try to bring the reports and some clarity to them on Tuesday during the closing market report. In just a couple of minutes, speaking of clarity, we'll talk about the weather forecast with Don Day of Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension. Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
It's National Jelly Bean Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1763, Jared Elliott died. Elliott was an American colonial clergyman and agronomist who wrote essays upon field husbandry. a tome about reducing inefficiency and waste in colonial farming methods. He also invented a drill which would open a furrow, plant seed, and drop manure in a single operation. In 1778, James Hargreaves died. He was the English inventor of the spinning jenny, the first practical application of multiple spinning of raw cotton by a machine. In 1832, Julius Sterling Morton was born. He was the founder of Arbor Day, first observed in Nebraska on April 10, 1872. In 1889, the U.S. opened Oklahoma to homesteaders, and the Oklahoma land rush officially began at 12 o'clock noon. In 1913, Thomas Wright of New Jersey patented a method to load ice onto refrigerator railroad cars. In 1945, Robert Elmer Horton died. Horton was an American hydraulic engineer whose studies on rainfall drainage established a basis for the analysis of soil erosion and soil conservation. 1 month before he died, Horton published a 95-page landmark paper that summarized 2 decades of study on rainfall drainage. And in 1970, the first Earth Day was celebrated, and that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Tuesday afternoon. Don Day of Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming is here. Good afternoon to you, Don. How are you today?
Doing good.
It's a beautiful day here in the Midwest. The planters are rolling. Farmers would like to know what the forecast is for the next week or so. Can you help me out?
Well, over the next couple of days here, we've got good planting weather conditions. It's going to be warmer. And for today and for tomorrow, it looks like for most areas dry, but as we get into tomorrow night and Thursday and Friday, there's going to be a swath of showers and thunderstorms rolling across all of the Corn Belt. Now, it's a quick mover, but this system could deposit a quarter to three-quarters of an inch of rain across portions of Iowa, Illinois, and Indiana as it moves on through. We'll probably have a 2 to 3 day period after that where we'll have some dry weather before the next bout of rain comes in, and that's going to be right around the Monday-Tuesday time frame of next week. And that system is going to be a bit bigger, going to be a little bit slower moving and colder as well.
Gosh, it sounds like April, but early April as opposed to mid-April at this point. But we'll take it. I think that doesn't sound terribly bad for the start of the growing season. Keep moisture in the ground and farmers in and out of the field from time to time. You look further out, do you see changing conditions at all as we make our way into the month of May?
We still, at least at the moment, don't have that one signal we see that would say early May is going to be warmer and more settled than what we've got going on right now. I think it's going to have to be probably more towards the second week of May before I think that happens. So as we go into that first week of May, it still looks cooler than normal, and it still looks like there's going to be some high probability of precipitation. So this is going to be a spring that's going to continue to test everybody's patience.
Speaking of being tested, the winter wheat crop in the Great Plains states and then down into the Southwest has been suffering. Do you see better conditions for it?
It's still going to be tough going. Although there's systems coming through, the track of these systems will favor tracks that will be more to the north. The exception will be some portions of central eastern Kansas, central and eastern Oklahoma, and some areas of northeast Texas. It's those western areas on the western edge of those southern plains that are still going to be suffering the most. That would be west Texas, southwest Kansas, southeast Colorado, and western Oklahoma. Precipitation's possible, but not the amounts they need.
And then I'd like you to think a little bit more critically about the dominant items that are affecting the weather today and what needs to change for that May weather forecast to get a bit warmer.
Well, what we need to see change in what is likely not going to are some of the big drivers we have this winter, which is warmer than normal water temperatures up in the Northeast Pacific off the coast of Alaska and the Gulf of Alaska. And also we still have a lot of cool air over Canada and a pattern that's going to favor that cool air from Canada to have opportunities to come south. And Todd, we just don't see this overall pattern that's been so stubborn over the winter and early spring breaking down at least yet.
All right. Any time in the past that we've had a similar situation, and how long does it take?
Well, we can go back and look at 1994, a similar situation, even a little bit of 2009. Eventually what will happen is that the longer days and the shorter nights and that sun shining longer will take over, but it's going to be a slow process. It's going to get until the second or third week of May, I think, before we can see it fundamentally change.
Thank you so much for the time. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
That's Don Day of Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Joins us on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.